welcome to the Poem of the Week. Each week, our poems are intended to help you practice the best, most current medicine by alerting you to studies that could change your practice. As usual, our host this week is National Public Radio's Dr. Michael Wilkes and Essential Evidence Senior Editor Dr. Mark Abel. Gentlemen.
Hello, Mark. How are you doing?
Doing well. How are you, Mike?
Good. COVID. It just, we can't seem to put this behind us. It looks like in the winter of 2024, we're still seeing high rates of COVID, although lower rates of hospitalizations. Listeners will know that COVID has resulted in a growing population of individuals who are recovering from severe acute respiratory syndrome infections. Our toolbox and our understanding of COVID is still growing. In some areas, it's still in its infancy. However, observational data suggests that these patients may experience a wide range of symptoms after recovery from acute illnesses. We now collectively call those symptoms long COVID. Of course, the most effective means to prevent COVID is still the usual public health measures, vaccines, masking, social distancing, perhaps hand hygiene as well. And several studies report that lower rates of long COVID occur in patients who are vaccinated. So that's something that we could perhaps do. Some aspects of the recovery may be unique to COVID, but many appear to be similar to other viral illnesses, critical illnesses, and perhaps sepsis. One lingering symptom that patients find incredibly difficult is the chronic heavy fatigue of long COVID. It affects well over 75% of people who experience long COVID. You found a poem. It was published in Clinical Infectious Diseases in 2023. It starts on page 687. It attempts to answer the question of, does cognitive behavioral therapy improve this fatigue in patients with long COVID? Mark, what did they find?
Yeah, this was a good study, not a huge study, but well-designed and implemented. As you said, severe fatigue is a really common part of this long COVID, or what's also called post-acute COVID syndrome, or PACS. In this study, they identified 114 Dutch adults who had severe fatigue. It either began with COVID, the acute infection, or was substantially worsened by it, and it had to persist for at least 3 months after the acute infection. So they were randomized to an average of 18 weeks of cognitive behavioral therapy or care as usual. The groups looked about the same at baseline. Only 11% had been hospitalized, so most had been cared for as outpatients. Vast majority were unvaccinated, and about three quarters were female. They only lost a few patients in each group to follow-up, so that's good. The CBT intervention included goal setting, targeting a regular sleep-wake pattern, developing helpful thinking patterns, that's kind of core to CBT, developing social support, and then graded exercise and activity. And there were several other components. It was delivered via online modules because this was done during the pandemic, in fact, sort of early mid-pandemic. You can get more details if you go to the study itself, and they have a supplemental appendix. So the main outcome was a score on a 20-item checklist, and the range was 8 to 56 points, where higher is worse. And at baseline, the score was an average of 48 in both groups, so quite severe fatigue. The clinical response was evaluated at the end of treatment at 19 weeks, and then again about 8 weeks later. The difference in fatigue scores was 9 points better out of 56 with CBT at 19 weeks, and a little over 8 points better at 26 weeks. And both of those are statistically and clinically significant. They also looked at the percentage of patients who had a score less than 35, which was considered a good treatment response, no longer severe. And that also favored CBT 63% versus 26%, so an NNT of only about 3. They looked at some other secondary outcomes. They all favored CBT, and there were, not surprisingly, no severe adverse events. So bottom line, for patients with severe fatigue, at least 3 months after COVID, CBT does offer significant improvement in symptoms over care as usual. So that's good news.
It's great news. I just have one question. We have talked repeatedly about surrogate markers. Obviously, this is all about patient-oriented outcomes. I'm just wondering, with the scale that you're referring to, and a drop of 9 points, And you said it was highly statistically significant, but do patients notice a difference? Are they saying, yeah, I'm feeling less fatigued?
Yeah, and that's called the minimal clinically important difference. We've talked about it before around Alzheimer's studies and, you know, is the change with these newer drugs statistically significant? Yes. Clinically significant? Probably not. In this case, with a scale of the range of the scale is about 50 points total. So you would expect a minimal clinically important difference to be somewhere in the neighborhood of 5 points. Mm-hmm. And so 9 exceeds that. So it is something they should have noticed or would have noticed.
Great. I guess one more question, Mark. I don't know if you're aware of this particular scale, but is this the kind of thing that we can use clinically? Can we give this patients who are fatigued, who are going to embark on some sort of a regimen, and then follow them prospectively?
Yeah, I mean, you certainly could, but it's a 20-item checklist. So that seems a little bit much to be doing in an office setting in terms of just the time involved. Probably would take, you know, 5 or 10 minutes to complete. So I'm not sure that's necessarily going to be very practical.
Yeah, good point. Okay, thanks, Mark. We'll talk again next week.
Okay.
Well, that's this week's poem. Thanks for listening. If you'd like to read this and other recent poems, please go to www.essentialevidence.com. And please join us again next week for another medical poem.